Welcome to Reading, Writing, Rolling, Imagination and Fiction in the Age of Harry Potter. This is episode 38, Harry Potter and the Deathly Virus. Today, we will be talking with three students missing the last part of their senior year about how Harry Potter is inspiring them through the crisis. Thanks for joining us for Reading, Writing, Rolling. I am your host, Katie McDaniel, professor of history at Marietta College in Marietta, Ohio, and co-editor of Harry Potter for Nerds 2. My co-host today is Emily Strand, instructor of comparative religions at Mount Carmel College of Nursing and author of several Harry Potter essays. Thanks, Emily, for being on the podcast today.
Well, you are just breaking up the doldrums of quarantine for me, Katie. So thank you for having me.
Glad I could do my bit. Glad I could help. The same goes for me, though. I'm enjoying the little oases of Harry Potter that I'm able to put into my world. Also joining us today is Lana Whited, professor of English and director of the Boone Honors Program at Ferrum College. Welcome back, Lana.
Thanks, Katie. It's always fun to be here.
Lana helped us out by putting out a call to seniors missing the end of their senior year about whether their experience reminds them of the trio's missing final year of Hogwarts. And she found three students happy to share their ideas with us on the podcast today, who are this episode's special guests. And so I'll start with Neil Fredrickson. Neil is a senior from Franklin County High School, and he is a Slytherin. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Glad to be here.
We are also joined by Jamie Gilbert, a senior at Ferrum College pursuing a BFA in musical theater with a music minor and a religion minor, and most importantly, a Gryffindor. Welcome, Jamie.
Thank you so much for having me.
So glad you could join us today. And we're also fortunate to have with us Miranda Veal, a senior at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, majoring in advertising in the Hussman School of Journalism and Media, and minoring in social and economic justice. Also a proud Gryffindor. And we're glad you're here too, Miranda.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. This is great. I think it's great to hear from people who are, you know, Harry Potter fans who are making all of these connections for themselves and seeing how, you know, they're getting inspiration from Harry Potter and maybe even some consolation. Lana, Emily, and I are very interested to hear how all of you three are connecting your current experiences to the wizarding world. But first, we want to hear about how each of you became interested in Harry Potter and, you know, fans and readers of Harry Potter. So let's start with you, Neil. When did you become a Harry Potter reader and fan?
I was raised on Harry Potter from a very young age. I read all the books in my third and fourth grade year, and I've seen all the movies, saw Deathly Hallows Part 2 in theaters. And my parents were actually very worried about sending me to school after watching some of the Harry Potter movies because I had a very good bloody L impression.
Love that. Yes, the important things we get from Harry Potter. Yes. How about you, mm-hmm. Jamie? Have you grown up with Harry Potter, a lifelong fan and reader?
Yes, actually also in the third and fourth grade, I started reading them. I actually hated reading at the time, and I had to find something to make up for accelerated reader points for AR quizzes, and the Harry Potter books were worth a lot of points, so I started reading them, and I found out I really enjoyed them, and then I started watching the movies and everything, and that's about it.
You know, you are not the only person that I've heard talk about that with accelerated reader. My kids also talk about how many points the Harry Potter books are worth, and it makes it worthwhile. You know, you don't have to read like 30 of these lower point books, but you can, you know, just read Harry Potter book 4 and you just get a ton of points.
I was trying to work, not work harder, but work smarter.
There you go. And look, it introduced you to the world of Harry Potter. That's also, of course, a very Harry and Ron kind of thing to do. So I appreciate that. All right. And how about you, Miranda?
Yeah, I was actually talking to my mom earlier this week about it and kind of just, I don't know my life without Harry Potter. I mean, the books obviously were written before I was born and my mom started reading them, which I'm sorry if that dated anybody. But I just don't remember kind of my childhood without it. Definitely still on the AR train with that as well. I can remember seeing Harry Potter books being on the list and thinking, oh, I have those at home. Let me just get some clout by reading those and like carrying around these like big books and very Harry, like Hermione thing to do, I feel like. But I think my whole childhood, I grew up reading the books and watching the movies, doing midnight book launches, midnight movie premieres, dressing up, doing all that kind of sort of stuff. And Harry Potter has always been a real big source of comfort for me in my childhood and even into my adult years as well.
Yeah. So, you know, I think one of the things that I find really interesting is that, you know, and I was already an adult by a lot when the books came out. But I think, you know, when you read them as a child, I think there's the possibility also of coming back to them as you get older and seeing some different things in them. And, you know, maybe this is an opportunity to do that as well. So, Lana, you were the one who suggested this particular show idea, and I think that this was based on a Facebook post by Joe Thomas that was posted March 27th. I don't know if you, was that sort of your inspiration, Lana?
It was, and actually, when something like that comes around, you know, I always have 27 friends who make sure that I've seen it in the same day, and I really appreciate that.
I think we have some of those same friends.
Yeah, I think so too. I had seen it a little while before that, but it did kind of surprise me that I had to have that connection pointed out to me. I hadn't thought about it myself. And the interesting thing about that is that at the time I was listening to the Deathly Hallows audiobook, and yet that connection hadn't jumped into my mind, probably because I'm not a high school or college senior, although I am the parent of two high school seniors. So this is a really, personal and emotional topic for me as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it does seem to really resonate with people. I sort of clicked on the original post and wow, it's gotten a lot of attention and a lot of people, you know, kind of tagging people they know in it. Right. So with the idea that, hey, you're going to find that somebody else will find this resonant as well. And one of the things that Joe Thomas was saying here was that he went from kind of being angry that J.K. Rowling hadn't given Harry and Hermione and Ron that last year at Hogwarts to kind of understanding that, you know, their life had different plans for them is what he says. And then he makes this connection to what high school seniors are doing now, staying home and, you know, social distancing. And he says, you are Harry Potter. You are Hermione Granger. You are Ron Weasley. And really directly connecting them to the books, connecting. I'm assuming he has some high school seniors in his life, or perhaps he's a teacher. And, you know, really directly making that connection in a succinct way. Neil, Miranda, Jamie, did you all notice that post? Had you seen that post before?
Yes, I did.
Yes. And did you find that it resonated with you?
Yeah, I had seen it. And I think I had also had a couple people tag me in it. And then I sent it to my mom and my mom shot me back a text and she was like, wow, like that was just one of the moments when I think some of the parallels started connecting.
I saw it when Dr. Whited posted it to our Harry Potter and the Hero Myth class Facebook page. And everyone who's ever taken that class with her is in that Facebook page. And we share everything from movie Harry Potter stuff to like Harry Potter memes. And I hadn't thought about it before until I read it. And I was like, this is actually really true.
Yeah. So I was interested if you'd thought about it before or if this really kind of crystallized something that you hadn't. Neil, what about you?
I never saw the post. The first I heard about this idea of linking the high school experience to Harry Potter's experience was when Lana invited me onto the podcast.
Okay, very good. All right, so, you know, in terms of seeing parallels between the trio's experience and your own experiences, it sounds like that's more of a recent, that you saw it sort of as we were asking questions about it.
I was actually in New York for spring break when kind of everything was happening, where things were starting to shut down. And it was like towards the end of our trip, and my friend and I were trying to get back home. And we had seen Harry Potter and the Cursed Child the night before, and both parts, like 5 hours of Harry Potter. And it was absolutely amazing. But that was when I really started thinking, like, I mean, diving back into the world in my head, as I think about it all the time. So as we were traveling home, and then when I came home and I was finally here, and then I was like, well, I need a source of comfort. Let me rewatch a movie. Let me restart any of the books. That's kind of when I started pulling some more parallels. And it was shortly after that that I saw, I mean, I guess like a week later, I saw the post and I was like, wow, it's like all kind of hitting me in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How wonderful that you were able to see the play. Maybe probably one of the last times that they were letting people into mm-hmm. the theaters.
Yeah. I think it was the night we saw it the night before all of Broadway shut down.
Oh, wow.
So that was very, very, very special.
Miranda, it was kismet.
Yeah.
So when you all are thinking about the experience that you're having, not able to go to school, whether that's high school or college in this last, you know, this last half of your final semester, what are some of the things that you find you're missing about your school experience?
Yeah, these were a couple of things that I remember emailing Lana about. Just kind of thinking about the last as a college senior, mostly because I'm not sure if I'll go off to higher education. So this was kind of like my last hurrah as a student. And I've been a student most of my life. So it's kind of sad having it come to an end. So like a lot of, I think, the meetings before and after this pandemic and this crisis changed as I thought about the trio and what they were going through. And obviously it's nothing like a war against the Dark Lord, but you know, those are things that I won't be able to get back. Like technically this week is supposed to be our senior week where we do a lot of our lasts, and I won't have a traditional graduation that we would have in May. Just as Harry, Ron, and Hermione never really got to have their last feast or watch the house cup being raised, hopefully to Gryffindor for the last time. As a UNC student and an avid college basketball lover, despite this past season not being the best for my team, the tie to Quidditch is something that I've thought about a lot, of like them not being able to really drive home their love for the sport. So just all of the lasts that I didn't get to experience that they never would have because of how their last year kind of turned out.
Yeah. Neil, what about you? Are there things that you find you're particularly missing?
Yeah, it's never been like the actual school activities. Like my prom has been canceled. I don't really mind that. I don't mind all my senior activities and the senior picnic all being canceled. I don't mind senior awards being canceled. It's really mainly been the people. I miss a lot of my friends. I miss my teachers. And it's just something that it's hard to cope with because a lot of the fellow seniors I have, I'm not going to see if we don't have a graduation ever again, maybe.
Right. I think that's so, you know, that's so important to think about, that high school, you're all a group because you're right there, but then you all go your separate ways afterward. And it is, you know, it is a kind of different time than what you have other times in your life because of that proximity that you won't have again. Yeah. I think my kids too are missing, you know, missing their friends, and they're not seniors. They're not old enough for that yet. But I do think that just the social aspect that, you know, we sort of say social aspect, but actually that's the core. When you think about what the students like Harry, Hermione, Ron, you know, what they are missing, I think that social part of it is a real key as well. And that's really one of the main things that J.K. Rowling is emphasizing.
Neil, you warmed my heart when you said you miss your teachers.
There are some great teachers in Franklin County.
That's awesome.
Jamie, what about you?
I'm a bit of both of Miranda and Neil's answers. I'm I have a senior voice recital that's been canceled. I was in two plays. Well, one was a play and one was a musical. I was directing a play. I was a stage manager for another one. And this is what I really want to do. And this was getting me experience to go out into the world. And now I've lost that experience and I'm not going to be able to remake it up. And I feel like I'm a little bit underprepared. And I also miss the teachers who have helped guided me on my career path. And I miss the other teachers that I don't necessarily need for my major because they're always so nice and helpful, especially when you're struggling.
Yeah, that sounds really important too. I'm very interested in what you said that, you know, it feels like you're maybe not totally prepared to take that step out. And I remember feeling in my senior year, like, one foot out the door, but like the other foot was still in the door. And, you know, the idea that maybe you don't get that last little bit of polish that you were anticipating. Lana, what do you think?
You know, I wanted to underscore what, I think all of the students have touched on. And this, as you know, I also got some responses from other students at Ferrum and other places as well. And all of them had this kind of sense that what's so painful about this experience is that they are missing things that can't be recreated. I'm holding an email in my hand from Catherine Bonner, who's another Ferrum College student, who said that this experience, she was aware because Rowling has said in interviews, I think with Pottercast, that Hermione went back to school after the Deathly Hallows year and finished her requirements. It's not at all surprising that she would do that. It's interesting to me, I believe that Emma Watson is the only one of the three main characters who earned a university degree after the Harry Potter movies were filmed. So there's kind of an interesting symmetry there. But but Catherine said, this experience has really helped her to understand why Harry and Ron did not return to Hogwarts. Because she said too much had happened, too much had changed. It could never be the same. And even though Hermione did go back, it wasn't the same. And that's what hurts the most about losing my senior year of college. And, you know, that made me think about the fact that we're missing a lot of things right now that can be quite easily recreated. Family reunions, even weddings, as painful as it is for people who've been planning to be married, to have to postpone that experience. Memorial services, lots of different kinds of things. They can be recreated. For these students, this experience can never be replaced.
That's very true. And if I could just add, you know, and this is maybe an instance of reality mirroring art or not. I don't think Emma Watson actually finished her degree at Brown.
She was at Brown. Yes.
Yeah. I don't think she ever finished that degree. And from what I've read, you know, she had to deal with some harassment. She was like a megastar trying to be a typical undergrad. And you know, maybe it was an unrealistic venture. But she, you know, had a real, it was a very difficult thing for her trying to get that education. And I don't think she has to this date finished. I think she maybe plans on it, but I don't think she has finished to this date, which is kind of, you know, kind of an interesting reflection of the story kind of coming back.
Okay, I'm Googling and I discovered that on May 25th, 2014, Emma Watson graduated from Brown University with a bachelor's degree in English literature. So she did finish the degree. And honestly, the only reason I knew that is that with a lot of the social media posts getting feedback for this discussion, we circulated a photo of Emma Watson in her cap and gown. And unfortunately, that kind of misdirected some of the comments to lots of people talking about all the good that Emma Watson has done in the world and maybe not as much response as I would have liked to the main question.
Too much focus on her.
Yeah, but it's really the cap and gown photo that's the way that I knew she'd eventually finish that degree.
Oh, okay.
But it took her 5 years, largely because of some of the things you mentioned, Emily.
And, you know, you have to think that, you know, if Harry and Ron had gone back to Hogwarts and probably when Hermione went back too, there's that element of celebrity that was always a problem before for Harry. But, you know, now all three of them probably would have experienced at least some of that, you know, defeating the Dark Lord and all that.
Sorry, there's not much doubt in my mind that if Ron and Harry had returned to Hogwarts, it would have been because they had a year of Quidditch eligibility remaining.
You know, that's one thing that, as Miranda was talking about, you know, missing the sports, I thought that's actually really important, you know, that for Harry to miss his last year of Quidditch. And, you know, when you're thinking about the parallels with what the trio missed and with what you all are missing, what are some of the parallels that you see? I mean, Miranda, I sort of pointed out the one with Quidditch, but are there others?
I think Jamie's given some good examples with her senior recital and the theatrical productions. I mean, those are things that are obviously not replaceable.
Especially when, you know, some of us are graduating and some are transferring schools. We'll never have the same cast again, even with the influx of freshmen. It'll be different than what we had been working on.
I think some of what Neil was talking about too, with not seeing your people anymore. I mean, with us, like, I have so many friends who have already accepted job offers in other states, who are moving to different cities, who have already, like, one of my longest roommates has already moved out now with everything that's going on. And so that there's also that feeling of like not having closure. And I think that's the only word that keeps circulating in my mind, is this lack of closure, to have. And that I feel like Harry, Ron, and Hermione will always have that. Cause like, again, we've talked about Hermione going back, but it's not quite the same. That I feel like their lack of closure is what, is another parallel that I keep drawing for myself.
Yeah. And do you think that sort of feeling of a lack of closure, is that something that we think Harry, Hermione, and Ron would also have felt? I mean, Harry and Ron don't feel the need to go back.
I don't know if it's one of those immediate feelings that they would have. I think maybe it would be kind of down the road remembering, I think, the events of everything that happened. But thinking back to them kind of being on their own with it and being away from the friends that they've had for the past 6 years, I guess that's another parallel to social distancing. but yeah, I'm not sure. I think it would kind of be more in the after effects of everything.
And maybe more painful for them because they don't seem to be carrying around cell phones and, you know, contacting people via social media all day long, right? I mean, they're kind of separated from friends in a way that we are not in our world because of the difference in use of electronic devices.
100%. I think that, like, for me, I miss so many people. I think in terms of, like, your love language, like, I'm a very, like, words of affirmation, physical touch. Like, I need people around me all the time. So I've had to really go out of my way to make sure that I'm still in contact with everybody and like on phone calls, on Zoom calls, on FaceTimes, making sure that I'm still having that contact with people that, just as you said, they didn't really have that luxury.
And, you know, especially when they're, you know, at number 12 Grimmauld Place, I feel like that's a little bit like, you know, the stay at home order that they're just there and they can't really make contact with other people. And they're really dependent on outside sources of information. You know, Ron is basically in hiding because he's not where he's supposed to be, for sure. And Hermione has, I guess, obliviated her parents so that she doesn't even exist to them. And I think a lot of people are making their own little, you know, little social communities of the people that they do contact. They are around, whether it's people in their families or, you know, you and your roommate in your apartment or what have you. And that's, you know, that's maybe a little parallel there too.
It's like the way we express our love for those people, especially the most vulnerable, is to stay as far away from them as possible. I just turned down an invitation. I'm singing at a wedding this coming Saturday, and it's the daughter of one of my closest friends and is the bride. And I'm still going to sing because it's up in a choir loft and I can just self-isolate up there. But she said, there's going to be a reception, a small reception at, you know, my dad's house afterwards, and you'd be welcome to come. And I said, you know, I don't even feel like I can accept that because I feel like my responsibility is to make more room for her family. And so my family will not be going, you know, because like that's my expression of love for her, is to stay away from her. It is a lot like, you know, some of the scenes in Deathly Hallows.
I am reaching for the Kleenex, I tell you.
I didn't have a chance to go home for our spring break because I was working on my internship, and so I've not seen my parents since winter break. And I decided not to go home to them because they live in Williamsburg, Virginia, where there's number one, like, highest numbers in the state right now. And I said, I don't want to come home and risk me getting it and giving it to them and to my grandparents. So I've kind of just felt disconnected from them, especially a few of them are sick at the moment, and I feel like there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's one of the things that's so difficult about the virus aspect, that of course is different from what Harry, Hermione, and Ron are experiencing, but then Harry, Hermione, and Ron are dangerous. It's dangerous to associate with them in book seven. And so some of us might be feeling some of that as well in our own lives.
And the movies, the films really amplify, they tried to amplify that by, didn't they add a scene where Harry tries to run away from the Burrow, like before the wedding?
That is mentioned in the book. It's very small. I mean, he says something about leaving and Ron says, no, we're coming with you. So it's mentioned there. But I think that there is a scene. Neil, I think you watched Deathly Hallows fairly recently, right?
Yeah, we watched it last night. Right before the wedding, Harry decides to go off without telling anyone. And Ron catches him as he was running away and forces him to come back or take them with them.
Yeah, I always hated when they made changes in the books or in the movies, you know, versus what's in the books. But now I'm appreciating that scene a little bit more because he does. He feels contaminated. He feels like there's no way they can stay with him and not kind of be exposed to something that they don't deserve.
Yeah, and another really good example of that is Harry's need, his sense of need to break it off with Jenny, because he doesn't want to drag Jenny into what he knows is going to be a prolonged period of separation. You know, the other thing about this, besides the sacrifices that we have to make, is the way that people maybe behave uncharacteristically. I was thinking about the fact that Xenophilius Lovegood is one of Harry's biggest supporters. At least Harry continues to hear that Mr. Lovegood is publishing all the stuff in the Quibbler in support of him. And yet when the trio finally shows up at the Lovegood home, Mr. Lovegood is willing to turn Harry in order to get Luna back. So, you know, the other thing that's difficult is that we don't all behave the way we typically behave when we are under this kind of stress.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So obviously there is this in book seven, it's a crisis year. And I think we can say, you know, just this last part of the spring semester from March on through, this is a crisis time. And one of the things that I think is really dislocating about it is the lack of predictable structure. And I thought that the original post was sort of about this too. Like every year you get on the Hogwarts Express and you go to Hogwarts and, you know, there are the things that you know to expect in your year. And then book seven, it's like, wait, what? This is not the book. This is not the same book. Like, this is not how the series goes. This is not how the world works. And I feel like I'm kind of in that in my own life now. Like, I don't know what's going to happen next because I don't have the seasons of the school year structure to really guide that. And it's weirdly disorienting.
It is. And I think if I could just share from my own experience, I have a third grader here at our house, and we started with a very tight schedule. As soon as the quarantine, his school closed and everything, we started with a very tight schedule, as most parents are doing. I mean, I think that this is kind of the number one piece of advice. And it's really interesting that because the only behavioral problems we've really had are when the schedule, we kind of have to improvise and the schedule sort of goes out the window. He cannot cope with it. He gets very, very upset when that schedule's not in place. And so just that whole pulling that schedule, you know, it's like pulling the rug out from under people. And I think psychologically we have a really hard time coping when there's not that predictable schedule. And I think that's maybe some people really didn't like the seventh book. And that's part of the reason, you know, they just wandered around for, you know, you hear a lot of people say, oh, I didn't like the seventh book because it's just this long wandering. And it's because there isn't these predictable elements of the school story that we all found great comfort in. That's sort of pulled out from under our feet.
Yeah. Neil, Jamie, Miranda, do you all feel like, you know, there's this kind of wandering? Are you trying to stick to some kind of schedule that would give you a sense of normality? What do you think, Neil?
I'm trying to keep up the schedule. The past week was spring break for high school students. We got a break from all our online classes, so I wasn't keeping to any kind of schedule during that. But as soon as my AP Calculus class starts up, I'm waking up 8:30 every morning, and that kind of gives me a good start every morning, and I get stuff done better when I wake up that early with something to do.
Yeah, what about you, Jamie?
I tried to keep to a schedule the first week, and I don't know what happened. And all of a sudden, my sleep schedule is backwards, so I wake up really late and go to bed really late, and I feel more of like a night owl now because I lay down to go to sleep and I'm just wide awake because the anxiety and the worries just keep me up at night, and then I finally fall asleep, and then I wake up and it's like noon. But luckily, most of the homework assignments aren't due until like midnight each night, so I still have plenty of time during the days to complete work. But I've not seen a physical person other than my boyfriend who I'm living with in like 4 weeks, so I go a little bit stir crazy.
Wow. Right. That makes a big difference. And Jamie, you are not alone in what you're experiencing. I was listening to what Emily described about having a nice schedule. Like, we can't do that in my house. I'm just not, we're not generally schedule people. Somebody else got to make the schedule. And keeping my kids on a schedule has actually been the hardest. That's where we tend to get our arguments. And yet unstructured time is ultimately, I think it's not good for us. And we are tending to, we're waking up later and we're going to bed later. And I'm with you. Like, I'm definitely, my head, my, you know, the wheels are spinning inside my brain. Got the hamster on the wheel up there at night. Just not sure what the future holds. I don't know, Miranda, what about you?
Yeah, very much on the same level as the rest of y'all. This is day 31 for me of quarantine, isolation, distance, whatever we're calling it right now. And I still have a roommate here with me. And we've, in the beginning, like we tried to have a really nice schedule. We tried to make sure that we got out of the house at least once a day to go for a walk. And slowly that started to like decrease. And she and I are having these kind of like flipped sleep schedules where we don't really know what's happening. We're just kind of doing our work and then just sitting around and not really doing anything. So I feel like the past few weeks have been a roller coaster based on what I've been feeling and like how I've been coping, where some days are like awesome and I'm like, yeah, I can do this. And then other days are like, I'm a little lonely and bored. So
Yeah.
it can be really hard.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I do think that you can feel some sympathy maybe for Harry, Ron, Hermione as they're wandering about the wilderness. And, you know, when I read the bit about Ron getting so angry about the quality of the food, you know, I was like, Ron, come on now. But, you know, that the importance of, you know, having the little things that nourish you and that you've expected to be there for you, and having and not being able to have that really wearing on you over time. And I think that his defection, like his anger and then defection, does illustrate, I think, you know, without giving Ron too hard a time, like it illustrates how difficult it really is when you don't have structure. And you know, and he's like, what are we even doing? You know, because I was thinking, what, how did they cope? Because maybe they had a purpose, you know, they know that they're doing stuff, but they don't really know exactly what they're doing. They're trying to find what is our direction. They're directionless for this period. And that's one of the things that Ron is responding to as well. So as I was thinking about parallels, I thought, you know, I kind of get what Ron is saying. I
That's
get.
good, Katie, because you don't want to diss on Ron on this podcast because, Lori Beckoff, she'll come after you.
That's right. We got Ron fans. We definitely got a lot of Ron fans.
Speaking of Ron, I want to say that one of those little moments in Deathly Hallows that makes me feel, it makes my heart leap up just a little bit in terms of what we're saying about normality, is that moment after the evening Ron comes back when he's in the tent and he's getting ready for bed. He takes those maroon pajamas out of his knapsack. Do you remember that? And I'm thinking to myself, oh, thank God, at least he's got the maroon pajamas. I mean, there's a good example, you know, of the things that are part of our normal routine that give us just that little margin of comfort.
No, I'm with you. And let me tell you, I think the comfort of pajamas is definitely something in the COVID-19 crisis that we can all get behind. We're all living in our pajamas these days.
No, we have day pajamas and night pajamas.
Day pajamas and night pajamas.
We're just wearing a variation of different comfy clothes.
I put jeans on for the first time today in like 2 weeks.
Dressing up for the podcast. I like that.
I did.
Well, are there any other parallels that you all see as you're looking at Harry, Hermione, Ron in that last year and your own experiences?
I have sort of a silly one, sure. I guess. I have a big, I guess, memorabilia collection of like Funko Pop figures and like replica textbooks and potion bottles and a Hogwarts trunk and robes and a uniform and everything. And all of it is at my apartment at Ferrum. And I feel like this is the first time in my life I've not had anything Harry Potter with me, because it was always in like my bedroom growing up. And I feel like they left Hogwarts with nothing but like their regular like street clothes and stuff. And I was like, this is probably, they probably felt like, oh, I kind of miss, you know, seeing it every day or wearing it every day and being around it kind of thing.
You need Hermione's purse.
I really do.
That's a great example, and there's nothing silly about it. But Jamie, I'm sure you left some protective enchantments around your apartment in Ferrum, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that's silly at all. I mean, so much of what we do is surround ourselves with things. That's what makes it feel like home to us. And I think it's absolutely. You miss some of those things.
Well, I will confess that part of what has made this experience more bearable for me is that I'm still working in my office maybe as often as 3 or 4 days a week, partially because I live out in the woods and the Wi-Fi isn't great there. But, you know, my building is locked up and generally there's nobody in it except maybe another colleague or two. And we kind of, you know, steer 6 or 7 feet around each other. But being in my office where my books are and where my Harry Potter stuff is and where my big old poster of J.K. Rowling is on the wall has made this experience a little bit easier for me than it would have been if I couldn't come to my workspace.
Well, I'll tell you, I left half a bottle of hand sanitizer on my desk at work, and I've been regretting that every day because it's still going to be there when I get back.
I said, I have to apologize to Ferrum College. I stole a bottle of hand sanitizer when I left out of the library.
Girl, just chalk that up to tuition.
Yeah. We didn't hear that, Jamie. We didn't.
Yeah, Emily, I was going to say, I think you're going to need definitely some protective enchantments around that for sure. Neil, what about you? Any other parallels that you see with Harry, Hermione, and Ron's experiences?
There are maybe not with the trio, but with the rest of the school. Mm. The rest of the school, they didn't really get to finish their year either, because the great battle against the Dark Lord's forces happened before everyone graduated, before everyone stopped. So, I mean, while the trio's experience losing Hogwarts may have started earlier, the rest of the school still lost the end of their year. The entire school, not just the seventh years, just like how we're having every school, no matter what grade, has to go home and miss that year.
I'm so glad that you brought up the students who are at Hogwarts, because I mean, they're not having their last year either. You know, that has to be so different and also horrible and a crisis moment as they are dealing with the different political situation. And a lot of students didn't come back, which we know it's not just Ron and Hermione and Harry. And Draco, of course, but lots of them didn't come back. But, you know, when you think about the experience that Neville and Seamus and Dean and Jenny are having at Hogwarts, wow, that also has to have been, just so different. And again, just not the same. It doesn't have the same feel.
I would agree with all of that. And I've been thinking about the fact that for the faculty, like Professors McGonagall and Sprout and Flitwick and so on and so forth, you know, that even though Harry, Ron, and Hermione and some of the other students are away, they do at least have some students there around them. And it really seems to me right now as though that would be some sort of consolation. In the week after we stopped having face-to-face classes, some of the faculty made a little short snippets and the media relations office put together a We Miss You video. And I said in that video, since I was 5 years old, except in summers, what I have done every weekday is go to class. I mean, I have done that for decades. And when I was at home the day that I made my little portion of that video, and when I started thinking about it, I had to just cry for a while before I could do that. So it seems to me that for the faculty who are still at Hogwarts, at least they have some students there and maybe some semblance of normalcy, which is a heck of a lot better than looking into your computer screen and trying to record a video when you're talking to a computer screen rather than to a room full of people and you're getting absolutely no reaction. It's really, really hard for me to do this without those faces.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the things I think of as a bit of a parallel is that the faculty, you think about McGonagall, I mean, Snape, I think, is doing this too, as we discover at the end of the book, but they are in their positions trying to support, to defend, to protect the students at Hogwarts. And sometimes, you know, they're doing that against the political situation and also the currents that are even felt within the school itself. And I think as a general parallel, we can maybe see that faculty are, I think the on all the discussion groups and so on that I'm involved in, the faculty are very concerned to try to support students, to make sure that they can get what they need, but also that they are taking care of themselves and are not totally overwhelmed. There may be those Caro-like teachers who are giving lots of extra work. This is the number one complaint I think I hear. But I think a lot of us are trying to be supportive and to be open and to keep the lines of communication open, even though, as you say, Lana, it's so frustrating not to be able to do that in person. We're doing it at a remove. And I don't know, maybe that's a good Snape parallel. That we have to do it at a little bit of a remove.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
We're leaving the sword, not making it clear who's delivering it. I don't know. My parallel might fall apart a little bit later.
I was thinking about this as well in terms of the faculty perspective, and I agree. I see. I feel like my role has shifted. For context, I teach a comparative religions class to nursing students. So it's a class that helps them learn cultural competency, but it's not about nursing. It's one of their only classes that's not about nursing. And so I feel like my role has shifted. Usually I'm kind of trying to assert the relevance of my topic and make sure it's rigorous enough for them to really learn something. And now I feel like I need to probably just take a step back because I'm seeing the students that I have, I'm seeing just, you know, this low grade depression, this heightened anxiety. I mean, they're already an anxious group, you know, for a lot of reasons. And I'm just seeing that amplified and it makes me feel like I need to strike a balance between rigorous material and compassion for their particular situation. And I can see the McGonagalls of the world looking at the students there and thinking, but they've got to know how to transfigure, you know, and yet seeing the abuse that they're taking from the Caros and from the situation at hand, and trying to tread that balance. So that's one aspect. Secondly, because I teach students who are going to be nurses, I worry about them because they're going to be the ones fighting the war, right? And they are the Harry, Ron, and Hermione. And they're going to be out there, destroying the Horcruxes. And so I worry, and I know that the anxiety for them is even greater because they know that while they have job security, that job security comes with a high price for them. And so I do worry about that. And I know it's in the back of all of our minds. We're getting emails recruiting them already into positions to help deal with the surge. And then the third thing I worry about is those students who maybe are experiencing both of the things that I just talked about, but they're also, because of the situation, maybe succumbing to the temptation to do things less honestly than they normally would. And maybe they're students for whom this temptation is in effect at all times, but it just got a whole lot stronger because they feel justified in getting through the work any way that they can. And I'm already experiencing that in my own teaching right now and trying to figure out how to ride that line between, you know, protecting those students, you know, who need that and who still want to honestly earn their grade, and then looking at the students who have kind of this tendency to go down this path, and trying to pull them back without being accusatory, without pointing fingers, without how do I protect them from themselves, you know, in the midst of this. So those are three things that really kind of weighed on me. I mean, I'm looking at again through McGonagall's, you know, square spectacles, and I'm looking at the Draco Malfoys of the world, and I'm going, oh Lord, this is the only thing he needed, you know, to go down this path into full-fledged, you know, villain territory, and trying to figure out how to pull him back while not while keeping her eye on the ball of the rest of the student body, right? So those are some things that kind of struck me.
Maybe your last point, Emily, goes along with what I was saying before about people behaving uncharacteristically and, you know, yes, differently than they would under customary circumstances. As I said earlier, I have two sons who are seniors. They're Neil's classmates at Franklin County High School. And when I ask one of them, one of my sons tends to say things in a very decisive way. I want you to know that, because this is a very decisive statement. So when I ask him about these situations, he said immediately, those two things can't be correlated. They're too different. And when I kind of drew him out, his explanation was basically the fundamental premise of the separation from school. He said, in Harry Potter 7, Harry, Ron, and Hermione are separated from school because the government is pursuing them and they aren't safe, even from the government. And in the current pandemic, the government has ordered schools to stop face-to-face instruction. And so students aren't choosing the separation, and they can feel that they're, however they perceive their administration, the school, the state, the government, whatever, they can still feel that that is benevolent and that people have their best interests at heart. That was a really interesting conversation for me because I hadn't thought about it. And I think the fundamental point there is right, that there's a critical difference. It reminded me of an essay that my colleague Catherine Grimes just published about conspiracy in young adult dystopian literature. And the thesis of her essay was that when young adults in dystopian novels are conspiring together, they often are conspiring against a hostile government. The Hunger Games is a great example. And there are lots and lots of other examples. And so I think that point about the difference in the government position and how much the young people have to fear is an important difference in this situation.
Absolutely. I think there are a lot of good differences to point out. You know, I wonder if, you know, Miranda, Jamie, Neil, if you all, you know, think about differences that seem significant that change the way you're experiencing you know, the COVID-19 crisis.
I was trying to think about this question earlier today, and the most, I guess, like the most obvious difference I could see was that we're, again, not fighting in this like crazy face-to-face war with like a bunch of people of evil, I guess is the only thing I could think. A scary time. I think another difference I have is that I'm not necessarily like afraid for the people that I know's safety. Thinking about like my family has been doing a really great job at staying secluded, much to their boredom and disappointment, but I'm not constantly thinking about like this imminent peril of everyone that I know, because I feel like things are going well in terms of flattening the curve. Obviously, everything is very scary still, but I think we're not inching forward to an imminent battle, in my experience.
No, that's a good point. I mean, instead of moving towards some kind of culmination that represents really something like a battle where things are increasingly getting worse, I think we're all hoping things are getting better, right? It's really the opposite in that respect. That's a good point, Miranda.
Especially with, like, you know, the Dark Lord and all of his followers, they believe that they were better than everyone else because they were the purebloods, and they believe that was like the right thing to do. But, you know, COVID-19 doesn't see, you know, pureblood or mudblood or muggle born. They it affects anyone who comes into contact with it. It's not selective.
Yeah. Boy, was that quotable.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the things that's important. I think there was somebody was saying, you know, the virus is not political. Although there's a lot of politics around it and what we're doing about it, that the virus itself, you know, is, it's not targeting just a certain type of person. Although we do see that, you know, older people are more susceptible, but actually I think, in the United States, we've seen that not even that is necessarily panning out to be the case. How about you, Neil? Do you see any key differences that you would point out?
I mean, right along what Jamie and Miranda were saying, it's that it's not exactly something that's a huge press concern on your everyday life. Like, yes, it's a dangerous thing that's affecting the entire world, but you're not sitting in your room thinking, how am I going to fight this? How am I going to attack back? You can't really attack back. You only hide, mainly. So a main difference I see is that instead of hiding, the trio, they have to go and they have to head on face and fight it instead of hiding from it.
That's an excellent point as well. You know, I think that's huge. And in a way, as I was saying, they sort of have a sense of purpose because of that. But it also puts them definitely in a lot more danger. They always have to try to figure out, what is the plan? Like, how are we going to actually make something happen so we're not just in hiding?
What I hear Neil saying is that what we need is, in a sense, a kind of an invisibility cloak, right?
Always.
Is that a vaccine? Is that a metaphor?
Well, yes. That's a big part of it. It's a really big part of it, I think. What I was going to say is that I think another difference, I was doing some reading over the weekend about the current situation compared to the AIDS epidemic, especially in New York City in the 1980s and early to mid 90s. And I think another important difference is the time frame of this virus, that you can know somebody. And I just in the last week have become aware of the first person that I know well, who's fortunately is recovering from coronavirus. But another difference is the time frame. You know, with people who were HIV positive, in some cases that played out over years and years, and people were losing friends over a long period of time. In the case of a pandemic, the time frame, thankfully, is generally a whole lot shorter. But the painful part about that is you could know somebody who seems well one day and who in 2 weeks could be dead. That's a different kind of painful, I think. Not necessarily any easier or harder, but just a different kind of painful.
Right. And of course, that's one of the things that they're so concerned about with the fatality rate, is that it will, you know, the people needing the hospital are going to overwhelm the hospitals because it's happening so fast within such a short span of time, that's one of the things that's overwhelming about it. You know, one of the things I also thought about, we've kind of mentioned it a little bit already, but, you know, you've got in the Harry Potter books, it's Harry, Hermione, Ron, who are taking themselves out, and we're following their experiences, while it does kind of appear that, you know, other people are getting on the Hogwarts Express, and other people are having their school year, even though it's a very different school year. But here in this situation, like, all the schools are closed and everybody is really having a common experience of it. And I think there is some comfort to be had in that, at least. I mean, it's bad for everybody, which is of course not good, but at least it's bad for all of us in this, you know, similar way, so that we can feel that we have some company in our isolation.
Yeah. And it's not just the schools that are closed. It's also the restaurants and the movie theaters and the bookstores and the malls, and, you know, it's such a complete shutdown.
Right. Right. It's not just students who are feeling it either. Yeah. Yeah. Other differences that anybody wants to bring out?
Also, like, that was mainly just affecting, like, the wizarding world versus, you know, the muggle world. This is affecting the whole world, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, we don't really necessarily have a difference.
Yeah. I was also going to comment on the global aspect of it, of not just focusing on kind of the area of England that they're in, of where most of this is taking place, but the fact that this is affecting everyone globally.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, Hermione sends her parents off to Australia, I guess, but you can't do that in this situation either.
I wouldn't say that the Dark Lord and his forces weren't affecting everyone, because there were multiple Muggles that were killed. There's a Muggle family that was highlighted in a paper in the movie that said they were murdered. And so I wouldn't go saying that this is the difference between them is that one affects only the Wizarding World and one affects the whole world, because Voldemort did affect the entire world. Maybe not as prominently, but still.
And I think that's one of the indications of the seriousness of the situation, that whereas ordinarily Muggles like the Dursleys are relatively separated from what's going on in the Wizarding World, that this is so big that it's spilling over into the Muggle world and into details in the Muggle news, even if those details are not things that people could put together and really understand, like the bridge blowing up, for example.
And I think one of the things that, you know, you mentioned there, Lana, the idea that the Muggles have less idea of what's behind it, you know, and what's causing this. And that there's maybe a little parallel there. I feel some sympathy for that as we're trying to get a hold on, you know, what is this virus and how does it affect people? And we just have a lot of unknowns there. Muggles that we are. Muggles with science, though.
There are just a few points in the series when we get reminders that there's kind of a shared humanity. And I think my favorite one is the moment when the Dursleys are leaving their home and Dudley says about Harry, "I don't think he's a total waste of space." That's one of the most moving lines to me in the entire series, you know.
Yeah.
Consider the source. Consider
a Dudley source. Compliment.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And I mean, I do think that there are some ways in which when you're in that sort of situation, you do recognize the humanity in each other. And some of the other things that maybe you've been arguing about fall by the wayside. They look as unimportant as they've always been. Not always, maybe. Yeah. We hope.
Facebook arguments notwithstanding, maybe.
Right. But, you know, I mean, but like, it's true that Harry and Dudley, like, don't, it's not like they're going to become best friends ever, you know, but there's even a sort of grudging recognition. I'll take that. We've talked about this a little bit, but I want to ask the students here a little bit more directly. You know, as we mentioned, Hermione, according to J.K. Rowling, does go back to complete her final year at Hogwarts, even though it's not quite the same. Do each of you think that you'll find some need for completion, whether, you know, that'll be coming back for a late graduation, or if there's some other way that you'll try to get that feeling of, you know, that you've wrapped it up or you've done some of the things that you'd expected to do? And let's start with Jamie on that one.
We've discussed me coming back in the fall to do my voice recital, but that's about the only thing that I'll be able to do from this past semester. And I feel like I want to do that to show how I've grown over the years of being at school. And there's also discussion of physical graduation in the fall as well. And I would want to come back because I want to feel that accomplishment of walking across the stage, but I don't think I need to be in the classroom setting. I feel like I've accepted it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but some of those ceremonial things, and I do think, you know, being able to have like your senior recital, even if it's delayed, can give you a sense of, you know, that feeling like you've put the capper on it. How about Neil? What do you think?
I don't really feel that I'm going to need too much completion. Yes, having a late graduation is going to be nice to get that walking across the stage. But otherwise, I don't need too much else from my high school year. I get to see all my friends if we do have that late graduation. I'll be able to say goodbye and split ways with them pretty well then. And my final spring concert for my band program, we're doing that online. Everyone's going to send in different videos of themselves playing. So that last concert's going to be there still.
Yeah, I think I've seen a fair few people trying to do something like that. That is a virtual version of what they normally would do in person. Again, to give that feeling of closure a little bit. Yeah. How about Miranda?
Yeah, so I've already talked a little bit about closure already, but I think that my university is leaning towards having a kind of commencement for us in August, I think was the last I heard. And that's something for me that I want, not only as a first generation college student in my family, to be able to have that kind of turning of the tassel physically, but also because it's such a celebration of all of our accomplishments that we've had over the last 4 years and over the last however many years all of us have been students. So just to have that moment with all of my friends here, the ones that I've met in this past year, the one that I met, you know, the ones that I met my first year, having that kind of celebratory moment with all of us together physically is something that I know I could never pass up. Just because it'll probably be one of the first moments that I have like a large physical, you know, presence with a bunch of people. But kind of having that solidified moment of we were all in this together and we're going to celebrate all together.
I want to say that I was thinking while Neil was talking, and I hadn't really thought about this before, I do think the situation for Neil is a little different than for Jamie and Miranda, because graduating from high school, in some ways, for students who know they're going on to college and who know where they're going and have thoughts about what they're going to be studying, which I think is true in Neil's case, there's a kind of a comfort in that, whereas entering the professional world or thinking about maybe possibilities like graduate school eventually, graduating from college or university is a different kind of thing. And so, you know, in Neil's case, he can know that barring some other world crisis, 4 years from now, there's going to be a college graduation. And that brings me to a point I wanted to make, which is that I used to tell people on a regular basis that one of my major disappointments, maybe the biggest of the Harry Potter series, was that Rowling never depicted a Hogwarts graduation. And then I learned that in the United Kingdom, there really is no such thing as a graduation from completing one's primary education. Commencement is pretty much a university ending sort of thing. I think there are lots of universities that have a matriculation ceremony, maybe similar in ways to the sorting hat ceremony. But even if not for what happens with the Horcruxes and the fact that Harry, Ron, and Hermione are away from school in that final year, there still wouldn't have been a Hogwarts graduation, because that's just not the context in Great Britain. So that was kind of a revelation to me, but I do think that's a difference in the situation for Neil right now graduating from high school and the situation for Jamie and Miranda graduating from college or university.
Yeah, I'm reading The Half-Blood Prince right now. I'm almost finished with it. I can't wait to dive back in after this. But I started it a few days ago, and a quote that I immediately had to stop and write down because I had forgotten it was one from Dumbledore where he says, "And now, Harry, let us step out into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure." And I just feel like I'm now being thrust into the great wide open without having that final kind of moment of saying this is over, which I mean, that's just my reality right now. And as for Jamie as well, but having kind of that moment where it's like, okay, we can come back and have the last moment of like school is something that I really feel like I need.
Yeah. And I think Miranda, you had said also that you aren't thinking that you'll maybe be back in the classroom. And so, you know, this is it. And then you're off to professional life. And I love that quote that you brought up. Adventure, and maybe you're not ready, but like, is anybody ever ready? You know?
Wish we could go out with Professor Dumbledore for the first few excursions into that flighty temptress
adventure. Yeah.
Yeah, there are good reasons why some of us have stayed in school for our whole lives, right, Katie and Emily?
Absolutely. I like school. But I don't like doing school for, you know, my college students and my children all at the same time from my home computer.
Yes.
So I would.
Education coordinator.
There are better things than that. Now, when something unexpected and disappointing happens to me, I often think, well, at least I'll have a story to tell about it. And so I wanted to ask our seniors, what story do you think you might tell about the last part of your senior year? Neil, start us off.
The thing about this whole scenario is that there's not too much to tell. We were sent home. We didn't get to finish our school year. But I'm just sitting at home and I don't have anything that I'm really doing. There's no excitement to tell. So any story I'm telling is going to be short and boring. It's just a matter of saying, yeah, this happened and there wasn't much we could do about it. And we just had to go through it.
Yeah, that's one of the things that is a bit unusual about this particular situation. What about you, Jamie?
I would like to think that life or fate has things happen for a reason. And I feel like that even though sitting at home doing work and then doing nothing for the most part has a reason, and I feel like I've grown an appreciation for not taking anything for granted, like the let's go have dinner with friends, or let me buy that pair of shoes, and that kind of thing. Of you never know what's going to happen, and so you need to appreciate it before everything's taken away from you.
That's very wise, Jamie. How about you, Miranda?
Yeah, I think for the class of 2020, this just will simply be a time that we'll never forget. Whether you're Neil graduating from high school or like Jamie and I graduating from college, we'll always have that memory as like the class of 2020 graduated in the midst of a global pandemic. Our chancellor actually, when they went to go change all of like the everything onto online, said that all of us would graduate with a transcript that said like exceeded expectations during a global pandemic. And I thought that was really funny. But it's just something we'll never forget. And I think especially for Ron and Harry and Hermione, they never had a dull moment any year that they were students at Hogwarts. Specifically for thinking back to like the 4 years that I've had at UNC, I feel like I have also never had a dull moment. So this is just another grand story that I'll tell about graduating college in 2020. And then everyone will kind of just know what I'm talking about. So I think just another story to add to my collection of life, I guess.
Yeah, Emily and Lana, what are your thoughts about this?
Well, I was just thinking as Neil was describing what sounded like, kind of a mundane experience of sitting out coronavirus, that maybe if nothing else, he could say that he had the opportunity to be a guest on a podcast for one of the leading Harry Potter fan sites. And I'm quite sure that would not have happened under other circumstances. It really is a kind of a singular moment in my teaching career for the reasons I've already stated about the amount of time I've already spent in school. I would say I probably am maybe 10 years out from retirement. And one thing this experience has given me some time to reflect on is what retirement is likely to be like and the things that I will miss. I think I kind of have blocked myself from thinking about that to a large extent. So it's been a very reflective period for me. And the other thing is my sons currently are 17, 19, 20, and almost 21. They're really stair steps, and they're all, and have been for a while, so launched into the world. Two of them have jobs. One of them doesn't live at home anymore. Really has kind of been a period when I really don't see them a lot. I probably have had dinner with those guys more over the past 3 or 4 weeks than in the entire past year. So I'm kind of grateful for having had an experience that feels to me in some ways, not that they're interested in having mom impart any great wisdom to them or anything like that, but I'm grateful for the experience of their presence. And it has seemed to me like a little calm in the storm, kind of like my own King's Cross station scene with them before they go out into those adventures that Miranda was talking about. So I'm really grateful for that.
It's a little time out of time in a way, isn't it, Lana?
It is.
Yeah. Time out of time. You don't have that predictable structure, but that in itself gives you a chance for reflection.
There's something about being in a time out of time experience that is dislocating, But there's also something about it that is really kind of universalizing and that focuses your thoughts with a clarity that I think otherwise we're often too busy to have.
Yeah, so I think some people have had that experience, like what Neil was talking about, where it's like, you know, what am I even doing? And I think so much of American life is characterized by busyness. And in fact, we, you know, we have this idea that our importance is related to our level of busyness. You know, it's a status marker in some ways. And so then to be in a period where it's in enforced non-busyness, I think I think hopefully it's making people think a little bit about our work culture, and particularly the emphasis we put on productivity. When it comes down to it, we see the connections between us as people are actually really at the center of what it's all about. As I get philosophical and reflective too. I'm not particularly not busy though. I've actually never been so busy.
I know.
And I feel like my,
I know it's because
my work-life balance, I didn't think I had work-life balance before, but now I'm realizing I was doing okay before, but because it's all happening at the same time and in the same place, it's all happening at once. And I'm still having some struggles with that, but I hope that, you know, as I look back and tell the story about it, I'll be able to think about things like family game night and, you know, the having the kids do the cooking in the house and the ways that, you know, we're trying to get out and take walks. And I've definitely experienced my neighborhood in this season in a way that I haven't before. And I live in a beautiful neighborhood, and I don't think I had fully appreciated that until now. And so I hope that my story will have something to do with, you know, the struggling through the difficult time, but also coming to understand the things that are indeed truly important. What about you, Emily?
One story comes to mind, and it's when my son had his first Zoom meeting with one of his school friends, and it ended abruptly when he got too excited and fell out of his chair. But but it must have looked, and it's a tribute to his friend who did not actually laugh at him. He asked if he was okay, which was a very sweet friend. But no, Katie, I'm going through some of the similar things. You know, like in normal life, before all this, which seems like a world away at this point, I would have been concerned about getting another insightful blog post up on my blog, or working on that talk for a national convention that's coming up, or, you know, instead I go through my mind and I say, when was the last time I called my friend who's in a nursing home? What can I do for my, cause I lead a choir at my church. What can I do for my choir in our next Zoom rehearsal that can be spiritually enriching for them? Or you know, how can I talk to my son in a way that allow him to process what's going on without seeming like I'm, you know, really doing that? You know, like, how can I get him to open up about how he's feeling? So you're right. My focus is all about the relationships that I have, and how to make sure people are okay. And in that sense, I think that's how I'm making sure I'm okay.
Yeah. I think we're all trying to see the glass of pumpkin juice as half full rather than half empty.
I was thinking a lot about your son, Emily, when the students were describing their experiences of coming to know Harry Potter, because for all of them, it was third grade or fourth grade. And I was thinking that, you know, your son is right at that point where this experience is only just beginning for him. And there's something to be hopeful about that, just as there is, as Katie and Emily, you know well, and students probably know this as well, because I've probably said it in your presence. For a long time, I really hated the epilogue to Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. But there is something reassuring about that notion that the Hogwarts Express goes on, and that students continue to board it on September 1st of every year, and that time will come again.
Yep. This is how we are become immortal in many senses. We live on through the next generation.
Yeah, and I do think that the Harry Potter books do offer some comfort that's very, It's very real, very tangible. And I think that the students, you all sort of had mentioned that as well. Miranda, you were saying that you're finding some comfort in reading Harry Potter at this time. What are some of the things that you're turning to there?
I think for me specifically, the first movie is just one of those that's always just so cozy. I don't know if it's just the way Chris Columbus made it with the lights and the Christmas time at Hogwarts and everything. It's just so comforting to me. And I know almost every single word, and I'm not going to be surprised by them finding the troll in the dungeon. Like, it's just so comforting to me to know that I love these characters and these stories so much. So I've watched The Sorcerer's Stone quite a few times since I've been home. But then reading through the books, and I know that as soon as I finish Deathly Hallows up there on my bookshelf, I'm going to go right back to number one. just because I can get lost in it. And I think that's the biggest thing that I've been thinking about in terms of the Wizarding World and Harry Potter is there's so much uncertainty that's going on right now in our own world that I can get lost in a world so familiar to me by watching the movies or reading the books.
Yeah. Neil, are you turning to the books some? Are you finding some comfort in the Harry Potter world?
I haven't been doing a lot of reading over the quarantine. I've been a little bit occupied with schoolwork, and then I got a drum set, which is a lot of fun. But
that's got to go in your story, Neil. That's got to be part of the story.
Yeah, definitely. As soon as this podcast was brought up to me and we've been talking about this, I've been thinking more and more. I need to probably go back and reread them because it's been quite a while since I've picked up one of the Harry Potter books. And I haven't watched too many movies recently. We watched Deathly Hallows Part 1 last night to prepare for this. But I'm realizing now that it probably be a fun and good experience to go back and relive those moments.
Yeah, and like I said, maybe I always think I find something new in a book every time I read it in a different context, a different time in my life, and, you know, new insights await, right? Jamie, what about you?
Don't have my books with me, unfortunately. They're at my apartment, but I have the movies here, and I've watched a few of them, and I just remember it kind of took me back to a time when I was younger and watching them and like how exciting it was to see magic spells and potions and mythical creatures. And I've always enjoyed it. And so it kind of made me feel like it'll be okay because in the end, like the trio turns out okay and the other kids turn out okay. So I feel like I'll turn out okay.
Yeah, you could take the long view.
Can I offer a tip? For those of you who may be separated from your Harry Potter books, I think maybe we'll talk about this on a forthcoming episode, but wizardingworld.com has got a Hogwarts at Home feature now that they some special content that they've put up due to coronavirus and quarantine. And one of the I've heard from my friend Brenton that one of the features of that is they're offering a free audiobook of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. So you can listen to that for free. So which might bring people a lot of comfort.
Also, unless I'm mistaken, I believe that you can access the British editions of the Harry Potter novels narrated by Stephen Fry, who takes a really different approach from Jim Dale, who doesn't make so much of an attempt to do all the individual voices and that kind of thing, but takes more a kind of a straight narrator role. I think those are available online free. At least there was a time when one of my friends listened to them all online. I have not listened to those versions myself. And there's something I kind of like about, you know, having Harry Potter experiences that I haven't completely exhausted.
Right. I've listened to some of the Stephen Fry, and he's good too. You're right. He's quite different, but very enjoyable. You know, the turn of the phrases that he does, he captures something, I think, about J.K. Rowling's voice in a weird way.
Really completely love Jim Dale. I am terribly tired of his Hermione voice, and I've been realizing that only lately. I really just think it's wrong, and I get more tired of it every time I listen to it. So I think I'm going to listen to the Stephen Fry next time through.
Love it.
All right, very good. So some tips also for listeners there if you're looking to turn to Harry Potter in the time of quarantine. And I think the things that people have mentioned here, I also find, you know, that it's an escape. It provides some reassurance. I love a happy ending, and I really like the epilogue for that feeling of continuity and that, you know, Hogwarts is always there. Hogwarts is still there after all of that. And it does provide comfort and also meaning as we are struggling with the story of our own lives in this particular time. Well, thank you so much, Neil Fredrickson, Jamie Gilbert, and Miranda Veal for sharing your thoughts with us today. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, great to have you. Thank you.
Thank you,
Lana, for the idea to have this important conversation and for connecting us with these really insightful students. Appreciate it, Lana.
Thank you, Katie. For me, it was another of those moments of light and dark times.
Thank you, Emily, for being my co-host today.
Hey, I'm just glad I didn't fall out of my chair.
That's right. That's the important thing to remember. We're setting the bar low. I'd like to give a big thanks to our technical editor in Australia, Emma Nicholson. Thanks for all you do, Emma. We couldn't do this without you. And as always, we appreciate our partners at MuggleNet, the number one Wizarding World resource since 1999, and our MuggleNet producer, Lori Beckhoff. Thank you, Lori. Dear listeners, we are so glad you joined us today, and we would love it if you would leave a comment or question for us. Please share your thoughts at readingwritingrolling@gmail.com, readwriteroll on Twitter, or on our Facebook page. And now I will leave you with the wisdom of Albus Percival Wulfric Brian Dumbledore, who said, "Words are, in my not-so-humble opinion, our most inexhaustible source of magic, capable of both inflicting injury and remedying it." We'll see you next time when we'll be using our words to make some magic.